what we learned about our thoughts last week is realizing that there's always a change, there's always this fluidity going on, and the thoughts we choose has an effect on how things show up. If you remember the analogy of the clouds, remember how you can have a blue sky and a cloud can begin to form. You have some white wispy clouds, and that cloud can do a number of things. What are some things that that cloud can do? It can dissipate, it can disappear, or
form into the rain.
Form into rain clouds. So at any point along the way, any circumstance can evolve back where it came from or move forward to something better. If we have a goal and we hold it in our mind, then the circumstances that need to gather for that to come true are beginning to move. And when I learned that, it helped me with my faith, because it used to be that I would set a goal and I felt like it depended on me 100% to make that happen. And so if I had a business goal or something like that, and if I wasn't making phone calls, I thought nothing was happening. You know what I mean? But when in reality, as you're thinking properly, as you're thinking creatively, and being at peace, if you're in a state of peace and love and growth and these kinds of things, then circumstances are still gathering for your benefit, even when you're not on the phone. Can you see how that can help with your faith? You plant a seed of a goal, and you move towards it, but I kept falling short because I thought I had to be perfect for it to come true. I thought I had to behave perfectly. I thought I had to, if I left anything undone, it wouldn't happen. That's not the case, because as you take a step towards what you're after, it takes a step towards you, and that's part of this whole law. Now, we talked about how you can break yourself against this law by thinking about what kinds of thoughts. Okay, here's an example. When my husband and I were first getting married, we were traveling down to be married from Utah to here, and it was through the night, and my husband fell asleep at the wheel, and I was already asleep. And so we start to go off the road, and you feel this, and he wakes up and gets us back on the road, and it just created a trauma for me. And I don't know that I had this trauma before, but since then, I had a really hard time sleeping in cars. You know, I just always have to be awake and watchful. And even if we're driving through the night and I'm driving, my husband can take a turn. If I'm exhausted, I'm falling asleep. But okay, honey, you got to drive. But if anybody else is driving, I'm like this. And, you know, I had a friend once tell me, I sit and I picture the most horrific accident possible because then I know it's reduced the chances by 50%. Like, what philosophy is that? You know, if you don't know what true philosophy is. Oh, that's frightening. So what I had to do, and one of the first times I ever really tried to apply these laws to my benefit, really before even understanding what I was doing, is, and we did a lot of traveling, a lot of long distance traveling, is I would close my eyes and I would picture myself tucking my kids in bed that night. That's where I would put my thoughts. And we'd be driving down the freeway and I'd see the barricade in the middle with all these tire marks and paint. What does that tell you about that spot? Oh, it's a dangerous spot! And I'd be freaking out, and there was nothing dangerous about that spot, but it was just my mentality around it, fear. So when I started picturing where I wanted to be instead of where I was, and visualizing the horrific accident that was going to happen with that semi, you know, that was swerving, and I had to choose my thoughts. I had to choose how I would feel. Now, if I was picturing my children at home, tucking them in bed that night, and then I got in an accident, that's something I'll deal with when it happens. But I believe that by picturing what you want and feeling the peace that's associated with it, I believe that has an effect on what happens. It's like praying for something and not believing that it's going to do any good. Is that faith? And so my prayer during those trips was, please help me get home safely tonight. I'm so grateful that I am at home, tucking my children in bed. And, you know, the power of present tense we talked about 1 week. And it put me in a state that emanated a different kind of vibration, and we've been safe. You know, can I prove that that's why? No, but I believe that's why. I believe that having faith has a difference. Have you ever been driving down the road, and if you're at the wheel and you're in a very tight place, maybe they're doing construction, especially on a freeway. I remember it when Utah was doing their preparations for the Olympics. The freeway was terrifying. you know, because you're going 60 miles an hour or whatever, 75, whatever the traffic's doing. And if you're in the inner lane, the fast lane, there is no shoulder. There's not even this much of a shoulder. It's right there. You have to believe that your car is small enough to fit between the lines, because if it wasn't, there's no hope for you. And I noticed that if I was driving and there was a semi truck next to me, this big, huge, right, you know, if I'm looking at the semi, what happens? I start getting pulled in towards the semi, don't I? Why does that happen? I don't know. But subconsciously, we move towards our focus. Subconsciously, our body reacts to what we're focusing on. And it's a very real thing. You can test it. You're looking at the semi, you look up, you're halfway over to him. You didn't even realize it. But I also found that if you're driving straight and there's a semi right there, I have to have faith that he's going to stay in his lane and just let him do his business. I have to look at where I'm going and just block everything else out and just do my part. And that's the only way I found that I could really be safe. Otherwise, I was a hazard, you know? And I also found that if you are coming up on a turn and you look where you're going, even though right now you're going this way, but if that's where you're going, you will naturally stay in between the lines if you watch where you're going, where you're headed, out on the horizon. You'll just naturally stay right between the lines. You ought to try it. It's a neat experiment. Today's law, we're going to talk about seven laws, and this is the second one, is the law of relativity. Now, just like the law of transmutation can work for you or against you by your choice of thoughts, the law of relativity is no different. The law of relativity says that every circumstance, every situation, everything that happens to you just is. There is nothing fundamentally good or bad about what happened to you. Is that hard to believe? Sometimes. I mean, think of the worst thing that's ever happened to you. Think of something horrible that happened to somebody you know. Now, by the law of relativity, that event just is. It's only positive or negative after we make a decision about it. Now, do you see how our agency, our control, our own thoughts have control over what we decide? Now, relativity. Something is only bad when you compare it to something better. That's the only time it's ever bad. And something is only good because you've compared it to something worse. So if something good happens to you, why is it good? In your mind, why is it good?
Because it's better than what you experienced before.
Because it's better than what happened before. Now, people who understand this law and use it to their advantage, what are they going to do? Something horrible has happened. What are you going to do? Could have been worse. Have you heard the old phrase, I complained that I had no shoes until what? Until I met a man who had no feet. It's powerful. And was it in here that we talked about the fleas? Who told that story? Will you tell that story again real quick for those who missed it?
Sure. Corrie Ten Boom and her sister were incarcerated in a concentration camp for helping the Jews during World War II. They had been hiding them. Maybe you've heard the book The Hiding Place, which is all about them and their life and what they did. And Corrie and her sister had very strong faith. And, of course, as you can imagine, all their ideas about faith and God's love and care were being tested as they're in this concentration camp. And Corrie's sister, Betsy, she had said, we need to thank God for everything. We need to be grateful for every circumstance, you know, that we're enduring. And Corrie was really struggling with this and said, okay, you know what, I can buy it. I can accept that, except other than the fact that we're having to deal with fleas. They were absolutely infested. Her barrack was infested with fleas, and they were just attacked 24 hours a day by fleas. So Corrie just said, you know, don't try.
Can I pause for a minute? Is that bad?
You would think so.
Oh, yeah.
Is that bad? Would you want to be infested with fleas? That's bad. Okay.
So what they ended up finding out later on through other prisoners at the camp was that there was a lot of molestation going on in the other barracks, that the male guards were attacking the women, and that the women in this particular barrack hadn't been bothered because everybody knew that this barrack was infested with fleas.
I get chills when I think about that.
Wasn't it even more than that? They were also left alone so they could study the scriptures.
Yeah, right. They got to keep their Bibles and all kinds of things.
Because they had so much more freedom because of the fleas.
Wow. That's amazing. And in fact, all things are just an event. It's just an event. Fleas, it just is. There are fleas. It's just an event. Was it good? Was it bad? What did she say? We have to be grateful even for the fleas. Did she understand why at the time?
No. She had no idea.
Do you think that there are some things we may never know? The reason why? Do you have any children where, I have one child, I don't know where she came from, she's just, anyway, she's from another world. She's grateful for everything and nothing bothers her, and she's such an example to me because things can go so wrong. Her little sister has cut her Barbie's hair so many times, even the special collector's one and the one that we just replaced it for, and just, oh, and she just keeps finding the scissors. And anytime something like that happens to her, she's upset, and then she's like, it's okay. It's okay.
How old is this dog?
She's nine. And I just think, man, I have a lot to learn from her. But how does that make me feel as a parent? Do I hesitate to share with her everything I have? Mm-hmm. She is grateful for everything. And we talked about this last week. I think it was last week where there was a farmer who was complaining about how horrible everything was. And up above, God was saying, you think you have it bad now? You know, look out. And then on the other hand, another farmer that says, oh, things are so wonderful. I'm so grateful. I'm so grateful for the dry soil, or whatever it is. I'm so grateful. And up above, God's saying, you think you have it good now? Just you wait. We can't wait to show you what I have in store for you. And so in all things, in all through these laws, and gratitude is not one of the laws that we talk about, but in all things, if you're ever confused about, well, what do I think now to make sure that I'm staying in harmony with the laws? Gratitude. Gratitude for all things. Even if we don't understand why. Even if we don't understand. Yes. Absolutely. One of the highest vibrations we can be in is gratitude. A deep and profound, real feeling gratitude. Not just words. Thank you. You know, thank you for this food. It makes me think of another story. Two little boys, twins, wake up in the morning, Christmas, and they run into the tree. And there is manure everywhere. And one little boy is like, oh, this mopping, Christmas is ruined. And the other little boy was diving in it, just dumping, literally just throwing it everywhere. He was so excited. And the mother comes in, what is going on? What are you doing? He says, with this much manure, there's got to be a pony in here somewhere. So in all things. So relativity. Now, in the book that I wrote for Hidden Treasures, I have a chapter on relativity, and at the time I was looking for a story that a person could think about what was troubling them the most at this time. And with that in mind, to read a story, and I thought, stories from the concentration camps. I didn't have ready access to any, so I took some stories from the pioneers, Mormon pioneers who came across the plains, the Martin Handcart Company in particular. I remember as I was transcribing the stories and moving them into the book, thinking about something that's really tough, something that's really tough in your life right now, and then reading their stories and trying to hold energy on the feelings that we have about our experience. Remember one of them, and I'd like to read part of it to you. And for this to be effective, I would like you to take a minute. Something that happened to you that holds a lot of energy as being negative. And as I read this, I want you to think about, what if this were your story? Put yourself in this story as I read it. If it says mother, think of your mother. If it says a child, think of your child. My husband's health began to fail and his heart almost broken to see me falling in shafts. Myself and children hungry, almost naked, foot sore, and himself nearly done for. Many trials came after this. And these are real journal entries, by the way. My oldest boy had the mountain fever. We had to haul him in the cart. There was not room in the wagon. One day, we started him out before the carts in the morning to walk with the aged and sick, but we had not gone far on our journey before we found him lying by the roadside, unable to go any farther. Think of your child. Think of the child you have the hardest time with. I picked him up and put him on my back and drew my card as well. I can't see. Which made three children in my luggage, my husband failing more each day. The captain put a young man to help me for a short time. My other son... My other son, Henry, walked at 7 years old, 1,300 miles, with the exception of a few miles. I will here state that there was no time in crossing the rivers to stop and take off clothing, but we had to wade through and draw our carts at the same time with our clothes dripping wet. My husband's sufferings have always pained me, and I can never forget them. Poor Rob's feet, age 5, began to freeze. I cannot remember the place. It was after wading a very deep river, the freezing commenced. We had no wood but sagebrush. I went out and cut the sage to keep the fire all night, covered them up with their feet to the fire, and cut some more and kept the fire as well as I could. My clothes froze stiff. Well, we got through that night. Your father would not walk now. He would get into wagon after wagon. Look at this. She was writing as though she knew her children would read this one day. Your father would not walk now. He would get into the wagon after wagon, only to be turned out. The cattle were giving out, and everyone had their friends, but the friend, death, would soon end his sufferings. John, age 9, and Rob had to ride. Henry, age 7, walked. Your father would take my arm and walk a little distance, fall on his knees with weakness. After our food had given out, as I said before, we went to our tents to die. I always thought I could get through to Salt Lake City, and I tried to encourage my husband, but he was starving. He had always lived good at home. You know, sometimes we think of the pioneers that, oh, that was just their way of life. He'd always lived good at home. Your father, after having some food and clothes, seemed to revive. He called you to him and told you to be good and to do all you could for me. And then he said to me, God bless you, Ellie. That being the name he called me. You have saved my life this time, I said. We must hold out now and get to the wagons. We had to go back to the quarter pound of flour, and he sank under it. I think he would not have died if he had got food, but he was spared the trial ahead. We went to bed about 3 o'clock. He put his arm around me and said, breathed his last. Father was buried in the morning with two more in the grave. I stood like a statue, bewildered, not a tear. The cold chills, even now as I write, creep over my body, for I feel I can still see the wolves waiting for their bodies as they would come down to camp before we left. When I got into camp, I found it some help to toast the rawhide on the coals and chew it. It helped to keep the hunger away, for I was feeling it rather keenly now. I had to take a portion of poor Robert's feet off, which pierced my very soul. I had to sever the leaders with a pair of scissors. Little did I think when I bought them in Old England that they would be used for such a purpose. Every day some portion was decaying until the poor boy's feet were all gone. Then John's began to freeze, then afterwards my own. What's your biggest challenge right now? What would these immigrants have to say about the load you are carrying? What are your feelings about what they had to endure? At a later time, there was a meeting where some people were expressing criticism that church leadership had allowed the Martin Handcart Company to leave so late in the season. A man who had been in that company and was listening to their comments was finally compelled to stand and speak his mind. He asked the people to please stop, and in so many words he told them that they had no knowledge of what they were talking about. He said that the facts and details of the experience were meaningless because they did not provide proper context of the issues at hand. Was it a mistake to go so late? Yes. His sufferings were unspeakable and many did not survive. But he asked if they ever heard any of the survivors speak a word of criticism. No, they had not, and neither did any of the company leave the church. Imagine that. He said that because of their experiences, they developed an absolute assurance that God lives, for they developed a strong, personal, enduring relationship with him through their adversities. So, if something is so tough that it brings us to an awareness that God does exist, and it causes us to search for answers. And if in doing so we receive answers in time, sooner or later, if those answers come, was the experience good or was it bad? Just something to think about. And this is how we use the law of relativity to succeed in whatever it is we're trying to do. If it's a certain kind of atmosphere in our home, if it's a certain kind of lifestyle that we feel is important to us, if it's accomplishment of some kind, along the way there will be stuff that happens that looks like this. And it's only this so long as we compare it to something better. Now, as we're setting goals, the first law of perpetual transmutation, tells us that we should think on what we want. Think on how we want life to look. Think on the way we want the relationship to feel. Think on that. Picture it. Feel it before it's true. Feel it before it's true. Now, can you see a little bit of a conflict here? If we're thinking of something so great and we look at where we're at, what can happen? Discouragement. We can look at what we're experiencing now as not good enough. That's easy to do, right? That's using the law against ourselves. Picturing what we want is the first step towards accomplishing it or achieving it or reaching that, but only the first step. Where we are right now, we need to look at it in a positive light, shift our awareness on it, and feel grateful for whatever it is we're facing now. Feel grateful for the fleas. Be grateful for the thorns. Be grateful. Because it puts us in a position to receive more of what, I mean, if we think we've got it good now, God wants to impress us, I believe. I am convinced that this whole perpetual transmutation thing is to bring circumstances in your life that are custom created for you to grow and become what God knows that we can become. Ultimately, we're all after what?
Happiness.
Happiness. For some people, creating a multi-million-dollar company is what they feel is going to bring them that happiness. For all along the way, we can have happiness now and chase the wealth, and the peace may leave, but seek peace and the wealth will just come, I believe. I just want to ask a question. In your mind, think about one of the greatest accomplishments you've ever experienced, or something that you're very proud of, or something that you conquered that was really, really tough. Think about that. And then if you can, trace that back to maybe something that was perceived as bad that helped you come to that place. Maybe the bad situation, so-called bad situation, ended up connecting you with a person who took you on a completely different path that you wouldn't have been on otherwise. Raise your hand if you know that there is an experience like that in your life where something amazing happened from something that was originally perceived as bad. Now, if we can know that in the eternal scheme of things, or in the long run, we're going to be able to look back on all of our experiences with some degree of gratitude. Hopefully that's our goal, to be in that kind of a place to see that. But if we can know that we will look back on something with gratitude, maybe we can feel that gratitude ahead of time, knowing that it's going to come anyway. You know, like if something horrible happens, and like with the fleas, I'm grateful for this experience. I don't know why I should be, don't understand it, don't know what's going on, but I'm grateful for it because it's going to do something in helping me build character. It's going to do something in giving me compassion for someone else who comes along my path. And you know what, yeah. About the kids and about teaching them, one thing I'm learning, I'm in the learning process on this one, is what's taken me 20 years to get, I expect them to get, understand if I just tell them once. And it just doesn't work that way. It may be a lifelong process for them. It will be a lifelong process
for
them as well.
So you get frustrated because you have it in your mind.
Yeah, and it took me 20 years, and they're not 20 years old.
So bad.
Exactly.
And yet,
you don't know how much they have, because my son will say it in a smart aleck way, like, I know, be positive, stuff like that, you know. And so I know he's hearing it, but you want to know, like, how positive are you going to be, because it's not sounding like it.
Jacqueline, remind me next week to bring a quote, Curious How We Acquire Wisdom. write that down and remind me to bring that. It's powerful. I'm not going to botch it by just trying to quote it. Do you know this one?
I don't know that one, but I'd love to hear it.
Okay, and we're pretty much done. You know, something happens, and by the time we decide if it's positive or negative, we've created a story around it. Just food for thought for the next week. Something will happen to you this week, and deciding whether it's positive or negative only happens after you've created a story around it, after you've compared it to something else. And so for this week, I just want you to practice looking at things. Could be, you know what, I'm grateful for this. Why? Well, at least I have feet. No shoes, but I have feet. You know, just practice that. You can practice that this week. That's it.
Wow.